The Mike Dolce Show.
Cause you can, you won't, and you don't stop. Cause you can, you won't, and you don't stop. Or when you can, you won't, and you don't stop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mike Dolce Show, episode 21. Hey guys, I am back from Montreal in my studio. I like the way this sounds in my ears. I was working off my iPad headphones, like the traditional white Apple headphones. That's what I did the last two podcasts on, that way through my MacBook Pro in the shaky Wi-Fi of the Sheraton, Le Sheraton Montreal, right across the street from the Bell Center, which was really cool, convenient for us being with Team Hendrix. And if you guys saw the performance of Johnny, hopefully, probably half you, what it shows is half you guys are MMA and sports fans, advocates, followers, what have you, part of that world. And then the other half is the health and fitness, the weight loss, the lifestyle change crowd, which is a really cool audience. It's a cool group of people that we're in, because I'm the same. I mean, that kind of identifies me perfectly, I think. So some of you guys saw the fights, definitely, and the rest of you, I'm sure you've heard about it. You've seen the headlines on Yahoo and a lot of the morning news pages. George St. Pierre fought Nick Diaz successfully to retain his welterweight title, UFC 158 Montreal. But I was there with Johnny Hendrix, the number one ranked welterweight in the world based on his five-fight win streak, devastating win streak, in essence clearing out the top five. He beat the other four guys in the top five. He stands at the top. And he fought Carlos Condit, the former number one ranked welterweight, who just fought George St. Pierre in George's toughest fight. Condit lost that decision, close decision, you know, very brutal decision to George. So Johnny and Carlos were matched up on this card, and it was stellar war. They won fight of the night, so they got fight of the night on a card that had a lot of great fights. And me being there, being around Johnny for the entire week is interesting, because you see the culmination of the work, obviously the training camp and the time and the dedication and the years behind that, you know, the training camp before. This is my fourth fight with Johnny now. We started together before the Fitch fight, as I've said before, and it was Fitch, then it was Koscheck, then it was Campman, and here it is, Condit. And, you know, the first two times, you kind of start working with someone, you get to know them a little bit better, you get to know the people around them a little bit better, and it was always cool, always comfortable, you know, really good people, friendly, you know, supportive people, so it was always easy. But here we are at the fourth fight, and now it goes from being kind of an outside spectator, you know, paid consultant, professional, to a part of the team, a part of the group. So the hugs are not just, you know, memorable and appropriate. The hugs are now real. It's a real transfer of energy, of warm, positive energy. You know, when you see Johnny go out there and do so well, and, you know, his dad is there, and his wife is there, and his little girl's at home, and, you know, all the close friends, his training partners, his coaches, Mark Lehman, who's Johnny's head coach. He's been with Johnny for possibly his entire career. Adrian Ramirez, Johnny's strength coach and training partner. Adrian took some beatings, you know, helping Johnny get ready for this fight, not just motivating him. Stephen Warman, who's the striking coach out there, and does a great job. Nobody really knows who Stephen is yet, but he's very technical, very precise. You know, I heard him make a comment that someone says, "Oh, did you teach Johnny that left hand?" And Stephen said, "No, Johnny was blessed with the left hand. I just helped him find the position to throw it." That's, you know, very, very, you know, insightful way that Stephen's mind works and the way he relates to his athletes. So I'm there with those guys and the rest of Team Takedown, which is a great team and a management system and a support system. Team Takedown's interesting for you guys that don't know. They are an exclusive management system. They work with their fighters and they build their fighters literally from no fights, from amateur into, you know, UFC world title contenders. That's what they did with Johnny. They got him right out of college. They started to developing him. They brought in Mark Lehman and some other great coaches. They gave him all the training and the facilities that he needed and the lifestyle, of course, to be a professional fighter and to develop those talents. And here Johnny is. I think he's 10-1. So in 11 fights or so, he's fighting for the UFC world title. Very, very interesting. The fight itself was just a battle. It was a scrape. It was a war. You know, fight of the night, certainly. It deserved that honors. Back and forth battle. Carlos Condit is freaking awesome, man. What a cool guy. Great guy. But those 15 minutes, those 25 minutes, what a fucking son of a bitch. What a tough bastard, right? What a prick. When he's fighting against you, goddamn, this fucking guy won't go away. You know, my soul, you know, jumped out of my chest about, you know, 10 times during that fight because I saw Carlos, how hard he was fighting, man, like a man possessed. And Johnny, you know, was able to take it and dish it back, you know, in spades. Johnny landed, and that's why, because Johnny landed that same hand that knocked out Campman, that knocked out Fitch, that is, you know, just destroyed other guys' faces. Johnny landed that left hand on Condit at least 4 times that I saw, and Condit took him and fired back. Took him, got rocked, as you can imagine. His bell was rung and fired back, not just, you know, through whatever, fired back with precision, fired back with aggression, you know, with bad intentions. Just what a tough bastard Carlos Condit was, which made for a great fight. Obviously, you know how tough Johnny Hendricks is. You've seen his fight. I knew how tough Johnny was when he had that fight with Koscheck, because I knew how sick Johnny was getting into that cage, man. I knew how sick he was, and I knew how tough Josh Koscheck is. I mean, great wrestler. I mean, they have a very similar pedigree when it comes to amateur wrestling, and they're amongst the best on the planet. Excellent, stellar mixed martial artist, arts career with Josh Koscheck. I mean, we've all seen that his fights and his wars and just his dominating performances over really top talented guys. So Johnny got in that fight at such a low percentage of his true potential. And he won that fight strictly on heart. Strictly on heart. Strictly on stubbornness and desire. He didn't win that fight on any physical talent at all. That was amazing. So when I saw that fight, I was like, holy shit. This guy can beat anybody. This guy can beat anybody on the planet, not just in his weight class. You step on a Johnny Hendricks farm, I don't care what your body weight is. He's not going to put you on the scale before he beats your ass. You know, that's the type of guy that Johnny Hendricks is. So he's here fighting at 170. And a little bit about our background. So he brings me in. It's a great story. I'm going to get Mark Lehman on here soon. And Mark Lehman can tell this story better than I can. But the story behind Johnny and I is... Back in August of 2010, I think, 2010, 2011, I don't know what year it is now, let alone back then, but it was August, I believe, when Vitor Belfort, who I work with and was working with at this time, fought Yoshihiro Akiyama in Philadelphia. I forget what card that was on. Mike Pyle actually fought on that card also. So we get Vitor in the, you know, what happens at the UFC is Tuesday, all the athletes arrive to the fight city and they go to the fighters hotel and it's, you know, near the venue and all that good stuff. And they have a succession of events that need to take place. They need to, you know, sign in at the UFC. They need to, you know, get their paperwork done and they get put on the scale. So their official weight gets recorded. And that's done under the watch of Burt Watson, who is just the coolest. I'll spend an entire podcast on Burt down the road. So Burt gets in and gets Vitor put on the scale, and there's other athletes showing up at the same time. So Vitor steps on the scale. He's fighting at 185, and God, what was he? He was 185 to 205 is 20. So I think he was like 208. So he was like 23 or no, Johnny said it was 27 over 208. So 212, which makes sense because that's right where Vitor's body weight always is. So that's what it was. So Vitor steps on the scale at 212 on Tuesday. And it gets off the scale, and he's got holding the bottle, grabs a bottle of water, and I got a meal for him, and he starts eating. And, you know, we're like, oh, man, nice job. That's awesome. And he's like, yeah, I feel great. And we walk out of the room, and Vitor's got to sign posters or whatever. Johnny said he and Mark just look at each other like, holy shit, Vitor's not going to make weight. Johnny's like 7 or 8 over, and he's dying. And they're like, I couldn't imagine being 27 over in the same amount of time. Like, there's no way it's possible. Because what they were doing at that point, they were just doing what everybody else does. They were struggling. They were depriving. They were so sick and unhealthy. They hadn't been healthy for weeks, where Vitor, on the other hand, had always been healthy. He'd never been unhealthy. He's been healthy the entire time up until that very moment. So what they were shocked at how healthy Vitor was on a Tuesday before a Friday weigh-in, you know, when they're both cutting an equal amount of body weight, let's say. They're both 30 pounds over their weight class, 8 weeks, 12 weeks before competition. So that being equal, I mean, when they saw that, there's no way. So fast forward to Friday, when we do a pre-check-in, between 9 and 11, and then we have to meet somewhere between 2 and 3 to head to the venue for the official weigh-in at 4 o'clock, and there's a medical check before that. So between 9 and 11, the athletes go downstairs, and we show the fighter's banner and the fighter's shorts, and it gets checked by legal to make sure that everything's okay. And then the fighter gets on the scale again, pre-check-in. Vitor gets on the scale and he's like, 188 or, 186 or whatever it was, just perfect, like, a spit away from being on weight. And he's got a little bottle of water. I hand him like a bowl of strawberries and, we just happily go walking out of the room, like we're hanging out at Disneyland. Johnny and Mark see that. He had the worst week of his life, felt like he was going to absolutely die and can barely step on the scale. Where he cut 7 pounds that week, Vitor cut 27 pounds. Now, what's the difference? And that's why they called me. And that was before the John Fitch fight, 6 weeks before the John Fitch fight. We fast forward. I only had 6 weeks to work with Johnny. And then in that 6 weeks' time, Johnny had said after the fight, it had been the best he had ever felt for a fight. It's the most prepared. And it's the first time, he said that's the first time he ever felt like the real Johnny Hendricks was in the cage. Because that destructive weight cut issue was taken out of his life. So now he was healthy. He was a healthy Johnny Hendricks. And that's what I've been doing. That's what I've been helping to do with Johnny Hendricks and his camp. And, he's got, like I said, he's got Mark, he's got Adrian, he's got Steven. I mean, those coaches, they certainly need to get known or be known and get credit for what they do because they've really developed a super talented, a super talented, national champion wrestler. Which is, very, specific, singular sport and made him, an elite world-class mixed martial artist in 11 fights. Johnny, he's only had, he's certainly less than 20. I don't know if he's had any amateur or any smaller that aren't on the radar. But Carlos Condit, I think, has almost 40 fights. Ellenberger, I think, has over 40 fights. That's something to be said. This guy, you're not considered really, getting any experience until you have 10 fights. And he's just in that phase right now. And his last 5 fights were against 5 of the toughest guys in the world. So, that shows what a super talented guy he is and what a great coaching staff and system that they've had to develop him and bring him to that level. 10-1. Johnny, 15-1 in MMA, and he's 10-1 in the UFC. So there you go. That's not a lot. That's less than half the amount of experience that some of the other guys that he's facing have. And to do so well is awesome. Now, fight week. What I do is when I work with an athlete this closely, and I work with athletes and people in totally different capacities. Sometimes it's just friendly phone calls and emails and correspondence with themselves and their family. And we just kind of go... it's more of a friendship, a support system in a way, with suggestions and advice and recipe options and, training comments and, somebody that actually cares and helps keep them accountable. But with the athlete fight week, that same philosophy is true. It's just highlighted, extremely. And with Johnny, so I'm working with him fight week. I get to the city, the host city, early, a day or two early, because I want to hit the ground, get everything prepared for a smooth transition. My athlete leaves their home, steps on the plane, and they have a plan. They know exactly what they should be doing, what they should be eating, where they should be sitting, and how they should be hydrated, and what they should be weighing. So we have that, we're in unison as a team. When they land, that schedule doesn't change. A lot of other guys, they land, and they got to find a way to eat something, and I'll just grab like a chicken over a salad at the, Sparrow at the pizza, in the airport, or that's what a lot of guys do when they travel. They try and eat as good as they can in bad circumstances. Where the way my athletes eat and live is they never change a thing. The same ingredients that they had back at home is what they'll be eating in Tokyo or in Sydney or here in Johnny's case in Montreal. So I get to town early. And here I landed, it was midnight or so when I landed in Montreal. I don't like to fly. I don't like to leave early. I'd rather land late than leave early. I need my 9 hours of sleep. God damn it. Especially when I'm traveling. I like a smooth transition. I like to wake up. I like to drink my black coffee and coconut oil and stand in my backyard with my dogs and just hang out and, eat breakfast with Brandy and slowly ease into, finishing up packing. And then we'll have another meal or so before I typically like to leave, no matter where I'm going in the world. So here, this is what we did. And I land late. I land at midnight. And of course, when you land, everything's dark and cold and closed. And I make my way to the car rental. And I always get a car rental. So I'm mobile. You know, I go through the expense of getting that vehicle because even if it sits at the $30 a day, which is pretty typical, the $30 a day, you know, valet that's under the hotel, and I use it one time during that entire week, that one time could be crucial. I could have to go to the store, or in Tiago Alves's situation, we needed, he didn't have a sweatsuit. Something happened with his bags, and he didn't have the right sweatsuit that he wanted, that he normally used. And the way the location was, the traffic in the city, and it was an issue. And I actually met up with a guy, Ari Pappas. Actually, there's two different stories here, but as I was talking, Ari Pappas, actually, he saved the day one time. And I put out a tweet in Sydney. We needed something for the weight cut and couldn't get to it where we were. And we were in the middle of the process at that point. And, you know, I could have bailed and left and drove out, but that would have put us back in another capacity. And I put out a tweet to all you guys, all my friends out there, and Ari Pappas, in 3 weeks to Shredded User in Sydney, Australia, hit me back immediately. What do you need, coach? And I told him what he needed. He's like, I'm on it. Boom. He got it, taken care of, brought it back to the hotel. And totally, I was so cool, hooked us up. And then he and I, we sat in the lobby for a little bit drinking a coffee. And, you know, crisis averted. So Ari, what's up, man? I know he's listening to the podcast. He shows up on our Twitter stream and the Facebook page. So super cool. And he's made amazing, amazing progress. I don't know what his specific stats are. I'll update you guys on his specific stats. But totally changed his life. Physically, just everything. And he's got pictures of him. I'm jealous, man. He travels. Pictures of him all over the world, living lean, looking freaking awesome. But anyway, so I got the vehicle, and this is my fourth time in Montreal. I love Montreal. I've been in Montreal in the spring, in the fall, and in the winter, two times in the winter. The winter is not nearly as fun as the spring and the fall. Hopefully, I'll be there this summer, end of summer, 5 months from now. John Hendricks verse George St. Pierre for the UFC welterweight world title. Hopefully that's the end of summer, early fall. August, September would be awesome. Anyway, I know the city. I know the area because I've been there four times, and I'm 4-0. Well, my athletes are 4-0. I'm part of four victories. I've nevertheless left Montreal in a sad way. That's why I love going to that city. I mean, talk about positive reinforcement. Who was it? Ed Herman? Was it Ed Herman? I forget now. It was Tiago Alves. I think it was Ed Herman. Who did he knock out Joe Dirksen there? Was that his KO? It was Eddie Herman, though. I forget because I was Eddie with Eddie for a long time, too, and for a couple of his memorable victories. It might have been his knockout victory, KO of the night of Joe Dirksen. Then Tiago Alves for his amazing – it was our first fight together. His war with John Howard, such a huge display of Muay Thai talent with Tiago Alves. And then the third was Hendricks versus – who's his last fight out there? Kampman. Which was devastating KO. And here we go, fight of the night, Vin, win. So is that three fight of the nights?
No, it says Ed Herman was in New Jersey.
But what other Ed Herman fight was there? Was it? I forget which fights because we were with Kendall. I was with Eddie Herman since before he was on The Ultimate Fighter. And I was with him, actually cornered him for The Ultimate Fighter 6 finale or 3 finale when he fought Kendall Grove. And he was awarded in a split decision loss on Eddie's side. But they both, Kendall and Eddie, both got the contracts. That's how great that fight was.
Damian Maya.
Okay. Was that? No, that wasn't there. Bell Center in Canada.
Mm-hmm. It says Damian Maya versus Ed Herman added to Montreal card. It was 2008.
That could be. Well, if that's the case, then that's wrong because I don't think that fight went too well for Eddie.
Oh. I don't know. My research is flawed.
Flawed. What are you doing? Now, I know you guys right now are like, duh, Dolce, it's this, that, the other thing. Duh. Well, it could be. But I love Montreal. That's really what I'm getting. Such a cool, hip city, real laid back, super healthy. It's easy to get healthy food and eat healthy there. And everything circles back. Because I go to this market. I forget what it's called, like Marché des Rues. I think that means like, you know, street market or something like that. But it's a nice, it's kind of like a mom and pop supermarket. It's city style, so it's built into a city block. So it's not like, you know, you might recognize like a standalone built in the city block. And I would go and I just, you know, do all the shopping every day. And what I do, because I have this ability, I have this vehicle, every morning I wake up at 7 a.m. and I'm the first one in the market when it opens and I get all the fresh produce. Boom. I get all, I know the produce manager. I forget his name now, like Marseille or Marcel, something like that. And you know what's fresh. I know what's healthy. I know where it came from. I know what's, you know, already been washed.
David Loizzo. That's who we fought in Montreal at Herman.
And he won. Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
That was April 18th, 2009.
That's where I said I was there in the spring. That was with Eddie. So I am 4-0. That's right. Brandy, you shook me for a minute.
I'm back on the horse.
See what I have to go through, guys? This is why I am like I am. This is why.
Because of your wife's awesome qualities. You're welcome.
The whole world sees my happiness and my joy.
Okay, continue.
Okay, so I'm at the supermarket. I'm there at 7 a.m. I got my vehicle. It's freezing cold in Montreal. It's 7 a.m. It's 6:30, 6:15 when my alarm clock goes off. And it goes off at 6:15 every morning, no matter what time I go to bed. And there were nights that I didn't go to bed until, you know, almost 3:30 in the morning because we were up. I was up with Johnny. We're doing our thing. We're preparing. We're peaking. Until, you know, I'm up with him until 2:15 before I get back to my room and then get cleaned up and get straightened and prepped and organized for the next day, which is the way to do it, especially when you're a paid professional. You know, do not try this at home, kids. We are paid professionals. You got to make the sacrifices. So when I talk about my nine hours of sleep, that's my ideal. When I'm in game mode, when I'm in work mode, I do what needs to be done. I've certainly gone 48 hours plus with no sleep, and the athlete never knows that. Because every time the athlete looks at me, I am smiles. I am joy. It is good. What do you need, champ? What do you need? What do we got? Why don't you sit down? I got that. No worries. Like, boom, 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 boom. All the way through. Everything's done. Everything's handled. Now is my time to relax. And, you know, well, that's actually not true because I got shit to do. Busy day. It's a busy day. Right back on the horse. But I got to sleep almost 12 hours last night, and I caught up on it. We fell asleep doing what? I fell asleep on the couch watching The Hobbit.
All right, so I started The Hobbit. I waited all week to watch The friggin' Hobbit with you. You come home, lie on the couch, boom, out. All I hear, I'm going to hear snoring. I'm like, is that Zoe snoring? No.
Yeah, our pit bull.
It's you.
Yeah, I was like, sweet. And I she's like, you want to watch The Hobbit? I said, definitely.
He's like, yeah, built-in lullaby. Yeah,
right after dinner, and I get positioned on the couch where I'm like, you know, on the couch and curl towards the TV, but I know she won't be able to see my eyes because every time I start to like fall asleep, she's like, are you watching this? You guys know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. 5,000 of you just, you know, your head popped up because you heard that same tweet in the back of your ear. Are you watching this?
You're a jerk.
So anyway, I try and get positioned. And next thing I know, she's standing over me. Like, come on, let's go to bed. And like, it's the ending credits. Awesome. And that was at like, what, 10 o'clock? And I didn't wake up until noon today.
Yeah, you slept. You needed it.
I needed it. Because, and here's more of the schedule. So, just so you guys get a little insight, a little peek. Hey, that's easy. I want to do that. You want to be the Dolce diet? Well, here's what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you describe exactly what you do? Go ahead.
I'll never do it fully justice, but.
Yeah.
Oh, I lost. How much did I lose? I lost 17 pounds this week. When my fighter cuts, I cut. I do every single thing that they do, except for the final cut. Because I need to be their strength during the final cut. Every food, every meal, every morsel the athlete eats, I eat. When they don't eat, I don't eat. When they sweat, I sweat. And I sweat equally. And I even sweat more because I make my own status harder. I endure longer. I let them out before me, let's say. They relieve the pressure before I do because I know I'm just that little bit healthier. I don't have the external pressures like they do. That could be as simple as sitting in the hot tub, where we'll get in the hot tub and I'll sit on the bottom step with the water up to my chin and my shoulders and arms completely submerged, while they'll sit on the second step with their chest and arms out. And let's say we're doing intervals that way. Well, and now, you know, it's been however many minutes, time to get out. They stand up, walk out. I'll walk out behind them. those little subtle things, and probably, you know, a good portion of you have never been in that situation, but you understand what I'm talking about. And those of you that have been in that situation, hopefully you do the same thing or try to be the strength for the athlete. And I try and add just a little bit of strength to my athlete, a little more support. Like, I'm there with you. I'm willing to do it. But also it helps me be a better coach, because now I know what my athlete feels. I'm in it. And that's one of the great things about the guys at Team Takedown, with Mark and Adrian and Steven and Greg, who's one of the, they call him the sheriff. So he helps a lot. He's one of Johnny's good friends and represents the organization. And we would get in the tub, you know, with Johnny when it was time to hot tub, let's say, when it was time to sweat, whatever we were doing, the whole team would do it. That's nice. Instead of, and here's what happens a lot. We saw it all fight week. I see it every fight week. The athlete is bundled up in all sorts of, you know, whatever gear, crazy gear, and we're not. I mean, check out our Facebook page. There's some great photos that we didn't take, that other people took and sent to us, of us cutting weight or splashing around, really, at the Sheraton in Montreal. Some good stuff there. What was I saying before that? Brandy wasn't listening.
Oh, I was looking at Barbara's progress on 3 weeks to Shredded.
Yeah, which is great. We're going to talk about that soon. My sister Barbara, she followed the Dolce diet while she was pregnant. She gained 23 or 27 pounds during the course of her pregnancy. Yeah. Not sure, but I mean, you guys know, 27 pounds. And she started probably somewhere around what? Around 130, 140?
I think so, yeah.
Barb? Yeah, like when she got pregnant. So she, probably like 130. No?
I think she's lighter than that. She's tiny.
She's tiny. All right. So I'm just trying to, and what happens, because, you know, I'm trying to be conservatively high so nobody ever says, Dolce, you're lying. She was 128, not 130.
No, Barb's tiny.
Tiny, tiny. So she started off, but she gained 23 or 27 pounds. And the story is she followed Living Lean the whole way through.
She did.
What her doctor said, how she felt. We have photos of the way she looked. Within 2 weeks, she was back in the same jeans she was wearing before she was pregnant. Now, of course, she had a ways to go to totally reclaim her body, but we chronicle that also, which she has now. And now she has updated photos of her. You know, she does yoga, and she goes, you know, takes the kids to the beach, and, you know, she does all these great things now, and she has these photos, and she's still continuing to improve. But she transferred, you know, through the Living Lean phase to the point that she jumped on 3 weeks to Shredded, because now she was doing so well. She was doing, you know, she was so healthy. She did 3 weeks to Shredded and posted her results, or is posting her results of that, and that we're going to share with you guys here soon. And then she'll transition back to a Living Lean style again.
Yeah, she's doing great.
Really, really cool stuff.
So Greg the Sheriff.
So we're all in the hot tub, you know, and whatever. And that's part of the deal. And I'm kind of, you know, sharing with you guys a little insight into fight week. So I land, you know, that Sunday night or so, midnight, I get the rental car and I'm driving through, leaving the Montreal airport. And a lot of things are in French there. Montreal is predominantly French speaking. And I don't speak French, but I do know enough to be respectful, which I think is important, and allow the people I'm speaking with to know that I'm not comfortable. And if they do speak English, you know, I would appreciate it. And that they seem to be very open to that. And that's what I found. Now, if you try and speak, you know, just straight English to somebody that speaks French in Montreal, it seems, then you get the wrath of a Frenchman scorned. They just, you know, the attitude, the posture changes. But that same person, if you approach with respect and you let them know that, you know, you don't speak English, they're very polite, very helpful, and very, you know, happy and very cordial. It was a really odd thing. So I learned that my first trip, and then each time I come back, I just take that route. I have no problem. Even one French gentleman showed me the shortcut when I dropped off my car. Now here I am, yeah, and I'm this, you know, American, and I look like, you know, God knows the way I look when I walk through the planet. Just like, you know, I'm like a jeans and a black shirt kind of guy.
How do you think you look?
I'm like kind of like an ogre, like dragging a...
Like V5. Yeah, bump.
Like dragging like a mallet.
A mallet bike.
Yeah.
I'm going to club people.
Well, that's for, you know, whatever, my meat or something. In case I gotta beat my meat, I got a mallet.
That's great. But that's great.
It is big enough to drag, though.
Oh my god! You don't look like an ogre.
That's my picture, and I try and be extra polite because of that to people.
Because you think you look like an ogre.
Yeah, I think I do. So I try and be like extra polite and follow the rules of etiquette and civilization, to the T. And then the guy that dropped the car off, or that took the car from the Alamo for me, and Alamo's always, I like to use Alamo when I travel anywhere in the world. They make it really easy and convenient. It's a similar experience everywhere we go. So good job to Alamo, and it's not a paid endorsement. I'm just saying, we went to Enterprise a lot, and unfortunately, you go to certain places with Enterprise, and the rules change just a little bit. So it's not always the same experience. I like to just get in, get out. I do it so much. And Alamo, that's how quick it is. And a lot of times they know, hey, hello, Mr. Dolce. And I have a preferred number. And they just kind of know who I am, or they know enough to just be polite. And I'm in and out and I'm gone. But anyway, this guy said, hey, how do I get to terminal, WestJet to United States? And he says, he looks one way and I see it's way down. And it's this arrow and it says terminal. And he says, it's a shortcut. If you just cross this street here, walk to the glass elevator that is hidden, it'll take you right to the WestJet. So I was like, okay, thank you. I'm right there. And I like confirmed the directions with him. I started walking and I felt like, I'm from New Jersey. I'm from a shore town called Belmar in New Jersey. And when we were kids, we'd have, just every summer the northerners come in, the Bennies, as we would call them, people from North Jersey and from New York, guys that look like they're on the Jersey Shore. They would all drive down to our surf community. Belmar's a surf and skate, and it's a fishing community. That's the way it really is. And we'd get all these Guidos coming down, and they'd ask, they pull up, and I live 4 blocks from the beach, and they'd get as close as my house. They need to go 4 more blocks east, and he'd say, hey, where's the beach? I'm like, oh. Yeah, you just go this way. And we'd have them go in the opposite direction and take them to a lake. And it was a real shitty lake too. It was where the marina was, where all the charter boats and a lot of like the waste would kind of flow that way, and in this little basin, this little marina area. But it did have a beach, and we kind of send them out that way. Just totally, number one, get them lost. Number two, give them this body of water that maybe some of them have never seen before, and just kind of get the fuck out of here. So now I got this Frenchman, in Montreal, telling me to like take this quote shortcut
with a hidden elevator.
With the hidden elevator, and I'm thinking I look like a freaking ogre, American. Oh, look at this guy! And I think I was even wearing on the way there. I wore a USA Olympic jersey, made by Nike, which was really cool, comfortable, because I like to be comfortable when I travel. it was like a dry fit thing, and I was like, but I'm like, here I am, this is American, whatever. When you're American, you get this complex because everybody talks shit, so that's again why I feel like I gotta be super nice when I travel. And he sends me that way, so I'm starting to walk that way. I'm like, I kind of look back to see if I'm going the right way and to see if like he's laughing with his buddy or something, and he's back doing his work. And sure enough, I go down, I make the left, there's this beautiful glass elevator hidden behind like a left turn in a dumpster, so you can't see it unless you're going to, unless you know it's there. Beautiful glass elevator, it takes you straight upstairs, and I walk across the bridge, and there's WestJet right there. And when I travel, I've got my traveling down so perfectly. I travel with a backpack and a carry-on suitcase. I do not check my luggage anymore, and I have everything I need for 2 grown-ass men to eat sustainably and for me to train. For me to train twice a day, for me to hit the hot tub, and for me to have, clothes to go to the movies in. Presentable clothes to, be at the fight or the press conference afterwards in. And, all my hygiene products, and even, my laptop and an iPad and 2 phones.
And a skillet.
And, well, that's, getting to, I have my kitchen. I have a travel kitchen in my luggage that I bring with me. So Johnny's mind was blown, and his story's jumping a little bit back and forth because it's hard to do it chronologically. So if we did it chronologically, I was there for 8 days, 9 days, and it averaged out to be about 4 hours of sleep for me and just grinding. So that's 20 hours of grind, and the grind is like boot camp. I got buddies that are, in high-level military and just in military, and the grind was equal in a lot of physical and mental capacities because of the sacrifice and the discipline and the endurance that it takes to grind on limited sleep for me, because the priority that the athlete gets sleep. 10 hours of sleep is the goal. You know, I try and, you know, facilitate a situation where the athlete can get 10 hours of sleep. Not maybe not straight through, hopefully broken up, you know, get, you know, you six or nine at night with another 1 to 3 hour nap, you know, during the middle of the day or at some point during the day. Try and facilitate those schedules. And, you know, but myself, you know, because we can do that, it puts a lot of other stress on myself. Now, some of the other coaches, they get more fight week, more time off, because my athletes on fight week, well, they don't train, and everybody freaks out about that. Most guys, they have to train fight week. They train even harder because they got to work the weight off. They got to get the weight off. They got to run on the treadmill, and they got to roll, and they got hit pads with plastics on, and they got to, you know, do all that stuff. Where my athletes are done. There's no training fight week. My athlete gets to hang out, they get to relax, and they get to watch the weight just pour off their body while they eat, while they stay hydrated. That takes a lot of work on my part. And some of the coaches, they get more time off that way. The guys at Team Takedown and some of the other teams that I'll bring up as I go back and work with them, the guys at Team Takedown were awesome. They were part of the process the whole way through, which was really helpful. It was great for the athlete, great for myself. And, you know, it offered a truly, you know, positive environment, really a good, strong group. And unfortunately, a lot of other coaches and supporters and friends, knowingly or not, don't do that. So you get the athlete on some of the other teams, I saw it all week in the workout rooms. The athlete's there, and they're all packed in there. I call it garbage bags. They're packed in a bunch of garbage bags that are damn near duct taped to their body, and they're forced to, like, work out at a really high pace to sweat the weight off. I mean, basically, you know, building an oven around this poor guy. And the coaches are standing around and they're, you know, drinking a Starbucks or sipping on an energy drink or, you know, a bottle of water here and there. Or, you know, they're just going to get food or just getting back from food. I've seen coaches eating, like, you know, a little bag of Doritos from the vending machine down the hall while the athlete's, you know, on the sun, you know, literally dragging himself through a desert. You know, everybody around them is kind of, you know, like sitting in a movie theater eating popcorn and drinking big gulps is what it feels like. You know, I certainly don't prescribe to that. I don't allow it around my athlete. If a coach is like that, well, then the coach gets the day off. You know, they're excused in a lot of capacities, unless it's their session, and then that becomes another issue. But it's certainly not in the best interest of the athlete. Most of the athletes, certainly, they agree. And it's something that needs to be, you know, looked at or thought of or considered, you know, and that transfers to a lot of to the health and the fitness and the weight loss crowd, because it's the support system where at the elite level with these guys. And I say these guys like Hendricks and Belfort and Sonnen and Alves and Maynard and Ellenberger, you know, Nick Lentz, guys like that, the elite, they are in the top 3%. I've said it before. They are genetically superior to 97% of the human population. These guys. And the difference in their anatomy and physiology and their you know, intestinal fortitude is minimal. It's so small, in fact, that each guy is so similar that they do win and lose on a given day. They can beat each other on any given day, no matter what. Very rare is the anomaly that can stand out and beat more, you know, than three of them in a row at the elite level. So what is the major difference? Well, the major difference is the small factors that make up their day, their daily life, their decisions, their choices, their influences, their external influences. And that's you. That's us. That's the people around us. That's the support system. So all of the Dolce diet principles are amplified during fight week, during the peaking process, because this is the most elite. The least amount of ability for slip up will be shown, glaringly shown. It's constantly shown. One weakness, the one flaw, that will be your ruin, your downfall. So the Dolce diet process and principles, and it's certainly, you know, nutrition being the least of it, I would say, because it's much more the lifestyle, it's the approach, it's the philosophy, and it's the application. It's the dedication, it's the accountability. So during fight week, I show all of those things. I live all of those things. And that helps just a few percentage, I believe, with the athletes I work with that are in that 97%. It gets them to, you know, 97.1, just above a George St. Pierre, because that's what's needed. That's what you have to do to truly fulfill your potential, to live your potential, to keep making progress, exponential progress, sustainable progress. Well, you have to constantly apply those principles, constantly be accountable. So with Johnny this time, this is our fourth time together, and this is the best time it's been so far. And after the Campman fight, it was the best time it was so far. Each time we work together, it's better. But we always say, you know, we find flaws and we say we can do that better. We found a couple flaws with the protocol. And working with Johnny is great because he's so experienced. He's cut weight thousands of times. He's been wrestling since he was 5 years old. And I would guarantee he's been, you know, floating between weight classes since that time. He's been doing this his whole life. So when I sit down with Johnny Hendricks and we come up with the weight plan, the weight cut map, when we talk about the processes, we are building a sandals resort on Mars. That's what we're doing. I mean, we are engineering something, you know, that's never been done, never been seen before. We're operating at such a high level. We should tape these conversations. That would be freaking amazing. That would be amazing to sit down. And it wouldn't be, I mean, we'll get guys like that in and we'll sit here in the studio and we'll talk about some of the processes. But we need a behind the scenes detailed, you know, videography of these conversations of the elite. When I talk to Tiago or Vitor or Chael or Gray, Tiago, you know, Dwayne Ludwig, you know, I mean, there's some guys out there that are really experienced in the weight cut. So when we break that stuff down, it's really high level stuff. It's fun to talk about. I mean, it's mind bending. It's like talking about string theory or quantum physics is a lot of these, you know, weight cut principles and practices, the science, the underpinnings, and the practical application. That's the great thing with what we do, is because there is, you know, immediate results following the scientific method. Our results are immediately observable, immediately in the moment. We have so much data that we collect and we analyze and we constantly update and improve upon and retest. That's why it's fun working with elite athletes. That's why, I mean, why I say the margin of error is so small. When you look at the Olympics, I like to use the Olympic sprint because that's something that's very visual. The 40 meter sprint or the 100 meter sprint, first place to last place is a blink of an eye. When you on your screen, when that athlete first hits the tape, you typically only see the first four of them. Look at the distance behind. It's so many strides. 20 strides back is the blink of an eye. The difference between first place and last place is often less than a second. A second. Think about that. That's such a small margin of error. I mean, it's tiny. So with these athletes, the MMA athletes, it's the same exact thing. The margin of error is so small for success. So to fit in there and help do these things, and the daily application, you know, during fight week is fun. There's so many obstacles fight week. So Johnny got to town at 196 pounds, which was awesome. 196 on Monday. I got there Sunday. Johnny got there Monday. Fight week typically begins on Tuesday. We like to get there a little bit early and get relaxed, you know, get the feel of the city. So he was 196 when he checked in, and that was obviously 25 pounds above his weight class. So Johnny now has become Vitor of the past. That's, you know, where he felt great. I said, this is how Vitor felt the day that you saw him. Because I was like, how do you feel? He says, man, I feel awesome. He just traveled. I mean, he was traveling since 5 a.m. He slept 2 hours. He had an early flight. He had a layover in some, you know, another part, I think Toronto or something like that. And then he took the connecting flight here to Montreal. So he'd been traveling 12 hours or so. How do you feel? He's like, man, I feel great. Awesome. Look great. Let's go eat. Mia was already prepared, so we didn't have to wait. As soon as he, you know, doesn't even open his suitcase yet, and he's got the extremely healthy, vibrant meal. What was it? Did I have any chicken in there? I don't think I had any. There was any, no lean proteins, no meat proteins, no animal proteins. It was a huge salad. So many vital ingredients. I just mixed a little bit of everything with a deep green base of spinach and kale. There was chopped asparagus. Everything was fresh. What did I do? I did roast the almonds. I crushed and roasted. Yeah, this is in a hotel, guys. This is how I'm rolling. So I'm in a hotel. I crushed and roasted the almonds. I mixed a little bit of agave on there. Monster salad. There was chia seeds and there was, there was, so hey, I'll actually write it down and post it because it's, you don't want to hear me give 20 different ingredients on a salad. But that's what he ate, and it was just awesome. So, and then we hung out a little bit from there. Then we went and we broke a sweat, and you know, we just wanted to hang out and sweat. So we sat in the hot tub for a little bit and just shot the shit. You know, hadn't seen him in a few weeks. Actually, not really since the last camp. So hadn't seen him in a few months. We just hung out with the team and got to, you know, reacquainted and whatnot. And the weight just poured off. He broke a sweat immediately, and he was drinking 2 gallons of water per day at this point. And he was drinking a little bit more. 2 gallons was the minimum, and he was exceeding that, in addition to green tea, which he loves and is delicious and is awesome. And it helped break his craving for iced teas and other beverages, sweet teas. And that was a real easy transition for him. A little bit of green tea with some fresh fruit, a squeeze of honey, little pinch of agave from time to time. Great transition. And put it in the refrigerator in a glass container so it's served cold. Kids love that stuff. So back into Montreal, he's eaten. What did we eat? We ate 6 meals a day. He ate 6 meals a day, drank 2 gallons, even up to 3 gallons a day during that time. And the weight came off super easy. He cut Friday when he woke up, he cut 3 pounds. He went to bed at 175. He woke up at 174. He lost 3 pounds between the time he woke up at 10 a.m. and when he stepped on the scale at 4:15 or so. Now, think about that, guys. How easy is it to lose 3 pounds of weight in 6 hours?
Well, here's the thing. It is – I see a lot of people like, oh, it's not healthy for them to cut 25 pounds in 4 days. But I think people don't understand – that this does not start on Tuesday.
Yeah.
This starts, this weight cut starts weeks, a month and a half, 2 months ahead of time. The body is prepped for fight week. So essentially, what's happening?
Well, that's right. And that people do say that. And it's, you know what sucks? There's people in my industry, there's people in the industry that try and say bad things about me. They try and make accusations. They did this recently. I tend to get headlines from time to time for my work with athletes. And it's because the athletes say nice things about me. And then my name pops up in the headline, which is really cool and it's really flattering. Unfortunately, that got other people in the industry and in other industries, let's say, upset with me, for lack of a better word. And they take pot shots at me. Then I'll see, like, on Twitter, people like, hey, this guy's saying this or that or the other thing about you. And I look and I'm like, Jesus, I actually respected this person for a minute, or these people for a minute, or I could have respected, wow, you know, you do that too. You know, that's fucking cool. Like, this is your take on things, though it might be a little bit different than mine. Like Rob Wolf. Rob Wolf is a fucking brilliant guy, super smart guy. His diet approach is a little bit different than mine. That's cool. Nothing freaking wrong with that. I mean, super cool guy. And he's the nicest guy, where people have asked him things about me. And he said nice things about me. And I say the same thing. He's a brilliant guy. I think we'd be friends if we lived, you know, close to each other. But there's other people out there that think like, oh, you eat oats. Like, you fucking scammer. You fake, you know, how dare you? You know, what about this and that? And the conversion to, you know, and these are people that have credentials. Which is ridiculous, because anyone with credentials knows that everything is proven and disproven, you know, basically at the same time. There's so much, there's such an abundance of science that it makes no sense to grab anything, because everything's constantly changing. So if you point to a study that it was today, well, odds are, unless you're just citing that study, that study has changed. Somebody's come out with something new, a new finding. That's the way, you know, I mean, that's what science should be. That's the true intention of science, is constantly, you know, discovering and analyzing and retesting. But anyway, so I get bashed by some people, and it's a small majority, of bigger names, let's say. Not huge names. I don't think, you know, they're going to be on the Oprah show anytime soon. But people that have, you know, some worth, that there are groups of people that listen to them and believe in them. So these people say things like when I was linked with Chris Cyborg, who I'm going to talk about in a minute. I actually did was asked twice this week, once on BJ Penn's radio show and once on a Sirius radio show about the Chris situation. But my name was linked with Chris in the weight cut. Yeah, I think Chris is a truly 135-pounder. Yes, I do believe, based upon my voluminous body of work, that I can help her healthily get down to 135 pounds for competition weight if we make the appropriate lifestyle changes now. Of course we can. Of course we can. Why? Well, look at what I did with Rampage. Rampage went from 260 to 205 in the course of a training camp with me and beat Lyoto Machida in a very tough split decision victory. Johnny Hendricks was 212 pounds, as was Thiago Alves when they were welterweights. Johnny Hendricks now walks around under 205 pounds. Tiago Alves, who's been working with me twice as long, now walks around between 192 and 195 pounds. Given me enough time, the athlete becomes healthier. Everyone becomes healthier. Because you follow the Dolce diet principles, earth, grow, nutrients, eat every 2 to 4 hours based on what you just did, what you're about to do. You'd be accountable. We just go through the list. And then I have the recipes and then the suggestions and the experience. You know, I speak of experience. Here's how I lost 42.8 pounds when I fought Antonio McKee. That's what I detail in 3 weeks to shred it. I'm not saying you go out and do this. I'm not saying, you know, it's going to work for everybody. I'm saying, hey, here's what I did. Learn from me. Learn from my experience. That's really what I'm doing. So these people, sorry, I'm getting amped up over here. These people, it's hurtful. It hurts my feelings. I'm trying to help people. I'm trying to share information that we can keep learning and listening. And I hear back from you and, hey, I did this or I tried that and this happened. Oh, shit. Well, I wonder why is that? Well, you know, this person did that and I did this. So we keep the conversation going. But some of the others out there, they bash me. And I say, why? Look at the headlines. Johnny Hendricks looks amazing. This is the best I've ever felt. Yes, he did cut 25 pounds. And everyone says, that's not healthy. How can you do that? How can you do that? That's like so bad, so bad. No, but you're wrong because you don't understand what healthy is. It is unhealthy for an unhealthy person to cut weight. It is easy for a healthy person who chooses they are going to cut weight to eventually and actually cut weight with proper preparation, which is what we do. If you are in a supreme state of vital health, as you should be, and each second that moves forward, you should be healthier than you were the second previous. That is the goal, and that's based upon constantly being accountable to your choices. Now, if you're truly doing that, if that's actually happening, well, then the weight cuts are easy. A guy like Johnny gets into this, I mean, at 196 pounds, 196, he's in great shape. He's right about, you know, 10% body fat or so, you know, super strong, super, probably just a little bit under between 8 and 10. He holds, you know, he has a bigger frame, so it's a little hard to see exactly. And, you know, we don't, you know, get a bod pod or hydrostatic weighing. We don't even do calipers or anything. I don't care about that stuff per se. But just visually, I mean, he came in really lean and looking really good. I mean, with more muscle. He and Adrian added more muscle during this training camp, and that was a goal. They put on about 4 pounds of lean functional muscle. So his body fat percentage naturally drops as a result of that. Just the skin elasticity and things like that. It was hard to visually determine. So he's 196, 25 pounds over. He's eating 6 meals a day. He's drinking 2 gallons of water a day. He's not training hard. His body's just recovering. Think about the strength he's gaining. He's so well rested after the last 9 weeks of a grueling training camp, traveling the country, training with the best athletes on the planet that would mimic his training partners, bringing those guys in, going through brutal training sessions at Team Takedown, starting their training sessions at 10 o'clock at night so they're prepared for fight night, making those sacrifices of not being with the family and not sitting down to those meals and missing, you know, softball games and birthday parties and other events because he's a dedicated athlete making all the decisions necessary to become a world champion. So, I mean, that's what's going on. And a guy like this, a lifelong wrestler, wrestling since he's 5, cutting weight his entire life, says, this is the best I've ever felt because of Mike Dolce and the Dolce diet. And I have people out there that are trying to say I'm some sort of dickhead. That I'm, you know, oh, I don't know what I'm talking about, or I'm unqualified to make that statement, and how can you say, and come on, guys. You know, it's certainly ridiculous. And now, I mean, it's not bothersome. I mean, I'm not losing any sleep. I slept 14 hours last night to kind of show you, really, if it bothers me or not. It's just hard because it hurts the conversation of greater health. That the couple thousand people that listen to you aren't quite hearing the right stuff. They're not hearing the right message, that you're spewing negativity instead of trying to push the positive message forward. Yeah, Dolce thinks this and that, but hey, this might work too. This is good too. Come on. You can't bash me and my results. Helping people be healthy, that's what everyone says. They don't say, oh, this is the best my abs have ever looked. I've never heard one of my athletes ever say that. Now, I get a lot of Twitter and Facebook tweets of people saying that, which is cool because your goal's different. For the athletes that compete at that level, they say, this is the best I've ever felt. This is the healthiest I've ever been. That's what their families say. Janet at Team Takedown, she's like the mother hen of the entire group. You know, super sweet. And she came up and grabbed me and just gave me such a big hug and thanked me for looking after Johnny and keeping him healthy. And that I won't even share, you know, in detail what she said, but such a nice statement that a mother would say, you know, in you know, warm embrace, speaking about her child. And it's very much the same what Joanna Belfort had said to me when I helped Vitor make 185. And she teared up and said that I was their angel, because it's the best she had ever seen Vitor. He's so healthy. And she would get so scared to watch her husband cut that much weight in years past. And then to see him happy and smiling and playing with his kids on weigh-in day. I mean, come on, ladies. I mean, guys, anybody, just think about that. So that's freaking what I do. That's what I do. And that's why, you know, it kind of bothers me, because I see some of those and I just want to, you know, I want to say, hey, you know, why would you say that? But then again, not everybody has the same worldview as I do. And I forget that sometimes. Again, the common sense seems to escape many individuals. And it is unfortunate. But Johnny, I mean, such a great job. You guys, you got to watch the fight. See, I don't know if you can watch you can probably get the replays on your – we watch it on Xbox. Brandy actually rented it, watched it, because we don't have cable TV here. That's something we'll talk about down the road, too, when we're talking about finances. Did away with our cable. We just now, we buy all of our UFCs on the Xbox. We have the apps. We have Netflix. We have Hulu. We have a couple of those things. Dude, we're saving like $200 a month. Is awesome. And we're getting better, more quality, more directed television. I still watch The Walking Dead every Sunday. Cost me $1.90. The whole season cost me like $12 or something like that, instead of spending $140 just to watch one episode, you know, per week. But anyway, so Johnny, great job, you know, just constantly. Such a good guy. And I'm excited now for the GSP matchup in the future, if that goes down. And we spoke last night. We're going to speak again today. Every day we're going to speak, and we're going to build this forward. I mean, he's going to be the next UFC welterweight world champion. And it's super exciting, because I have so much respect for George St. Pierre and for Firas Sahabi, his coach. And, you know, John Donaher, his jiu-jitsu coach. John Donaher was actually one of my first jiu-jitsu coaches back in 2002 when I was training up in Henzo's New York Academy in Manhattan. John Donaher was one of the guys, one of the black belts that actually gave me a little bit of time, a little bit of attention when I was a white belt. And it was awesome. It was very, I mean, it just used to beat the shit out of me, but teach me, you know, while he beat the shit out of me, which was cool. And then he would, you know, watch me train with some of the other guys, and he would give me advice afterwards and just help build my confidence and build my skill set. So what a great guy. And I know certainly how good GSP is and his entire team is. And it's super exciting to sit over here on our side and, you know, be a part of Johnny's team and help him prepare and get ready. And it's, as a fan of the sport, I mean, how freaking awesome is this? This is the true number one contender. I mean, Johnny has done in the UFC welterweight division what Thiago Alves did a few years back to earn his shot at George St. Pierre and the welterweight title. Johnny cleaned out the division. He beat every top guy in order to get to the man at the top, where Nick Diaz didn't necessarily do that. I mean, Nick Diaz, he's held world titles. See, he is a world-class, world-caliber athlete, but he didn't clean out the division like Johnny did. So now, I mean, how exciting is that? So next issue is, I mentioned Cyborg before, and I'm going to just touch on it real fast. So I was asked on the BJ Penn radio show and on the Tap Out show on the Sirius Network, what happened with Cyborg? And I realized, you know, I never really talked about what happened with Cyborg, because now it's a past issue. I figured I'd touch on it here real quick, let you guys know, you know, my direct audience, and then just move on. So back in the fall, I was contacted by Chris Cyborg Santos, the 145-pound, you know, reigning world champion, who was sitting out on the sidelines because she had, you know, failed a drug test, tested positive for a performance enhancer. I don't know what it was, but her victory stripped of her. I don't think they stripped her title, but she gave her on a year suspension. Since then, the UFC started the 135-pound female division because Ronda Rousey was the reigning 135 champion in Strikeforce. They brought Ronda over to battle, you know, to defend her world title at 135, and they wanted it to be against Chris Cyborg. Chris Cyborg said, hey, you know, I'm a 145-pound athlete. We don't think we can make 135. They get in the negotiations. This is back in the fall. She starts negotiating with the UFC, and part of the negotiations was if Chris is going to make 135, they need to bring in a professional to help her make the weight. My name comes up. Chris Cyborg's team calls me and says, hey, would you be interested? We're in talks with the UFC, blah, blah, blah. We want to bring somebody in. We'd like that person to be you. Absolutely. Thank you. I'm honored. I appreciate that. The UFC calls me, says the same thing. What would my rates be to do such a situation, and would I be available? I said, absolutely. You know, I'm available as long as the dates, because I book 4 to 6 months in advance. I'm home for a couple days now, and I'm gone again. As long as the dates work out, absolutely. It'd be a pleasure. It'd be an honor. So that moves forward. I'm flown out to California, in Southern California. I have a sit-down meeting with Chris, just she and I, which I thought was very important. I wanted to speak with her coach and athlete. We sat down at a Starbucks, had a coffee together, and talked, got to know each other. How you doing? You know, where you from? What do you do? You know, about your family, your brothers, sisters, kids, you know, whatever. And then just letting her get to know me, myself. We're talking more than it gets into, first it was like, you know, the personal, hey, do we even like each other? You know, maybe we just don't vibe. We have different, you know, chemistry, and we don't like each other. And it's a short conversation. It's cool. We go on our way. That's awesome. You need to know that. Some people you can get it from. Some people you can't. We got along well. Next phase is, all right, tell me about your training. Tell me about your diet. Tell me about your lifestyle. Tell me about your sleep schedule. What are your stresses? What are your pressures? What are your injuries? Tell me how you rest. So we went through that whole system, and I saw, wow, there's a lot of things I could help address here. I believe I can help correct here all the way around from the lifestyle. I felt there were a lot of changes I can make immediately or suggest immediately that would have a dramatic impact. At that point, Chris was 168 pounds and she said she wasn't really training hard. It was the holiday season, and you know, she was training a little bit, you know, just kind of maintaining. She wasn't training hard. She was 168. I said, Jesus, you make some of the lifestyle changes that I'm thinking and suggesting, just start the living, and really it was living lean. She wasn't living lean. She was a little bit more very bodybuilding centric, taking the powders and the potions and eating kind of the plain chicken and stuff like that, bodybuilding diet. Your metabolism just gets stagnant. Taking the powders, who knows, you know, what's in that stuff, but you don't need that stuff. Make a living lean switch. All of a sudden that 168 drops into the low 160s, high 150s. We started training camp in the high 150s or so. Now we're getting more specific. That high 150s, which I believe is rather high, gets into the low 50s, high 40s. All of a sudden, once we're in the low 50, let's say we're in the low 50s, when we get to that three-week period, it's time to start peaking. Those low 40s, or those low 50s, turn into low mid-40s pretty quick. You know, look at Johnny. I mean, 25 pounds, super healthy. Fight week was easy. With Chris, it would probably be, you know, maybe 6 or 7 pounds fight week. I'm assuming, based upon my experience having done this for well over a decade in the world of mixed martial arts. I mean, I've been working with MMA athletes since it was NHB. I was working with MMA athletes before the Ultimate Fighter One, before the Unified Rule System. I've been working with guys, you know, all over the world. I've worked with guys in Pancrase and Pride and all that stuff. Based upon that experience, this is what I was saying. And then everything sounded great. And what happened? No phone call, nothing. No phone call, nothing. A couple weeks go by. I make a phone call, say, hey, you know, to her side, say, hey, what's up? What's going on? We're going to get going here. Yeah. We're just, you know, waiting to tighten things up. And then there was some sort of management change, evidently, where the people I had been speaking with weren't part of the conversation anymore. And there was, you know, press conferences. And all of a sudden, it turned into a media spectacle. My name was brought in the media spectacle, which I didn't appreciate. Now, Dana White from the UFC said something very nice about me, which I do appreciate. He said that the UFC was even willing to bring in, to pay for the services of Mike Dolce, the best guy in the world. We were going to bring in the best guy in the world, Mike Dolce, at doing this. And they still don't want to do it. Now, that's really complimentary. And then the other side didn't really say anything because they never called me. And that's what I found odd. They never called me. Why wouldn't you call? No, don't hire me. I mean, somebody like me, I mean, just call me and pick my brain for free. That's what I said. You can call me anytime. Pick my brain. Hey, Dolce, what do you think about this? Well, here's what I think. Here's what I would do. And she does this. I would do this instead. And the training, God, the volume is a little high. And the rest and this and that. And the hydration. You're getting beverage, you know, drinking, you know, colored beverages instead of purified water. You know, all this stuff. And that'll be a pound or two here. That'll be a pound or two there. We kind of walk down the system. Does that make sense? It either does or it doesn't. And we move forward or we don't. But they never called me. So if you're that interested, why don't you call me? So that was the issue. And then it faded away. Nobody ever called me and shit. Like I said, I'm booked until summer. I mean, and speaking of booked, how great has the Dolce Diet year been so far? Vitor Belfort, stunning main event knockout, head kick knockout victory over fucking Michael Bisping, one of the toughest guys in the division. Nick Lentz dropping a weight class. We took him from 155 down to 145, dropped him a full weight class. And he's now ranked number 8 in the world at 145, having beat Diego Nunez over in Brazil. career-defining performance that catapulted him. He wasn't even ranked to being ranked in the top 10. Catapulted him into, you know, international recognition. Then we got Jake Ellenberger, another one of my guys, close friends, love Jake, with a, you know, devastating first-round knockout over Nate Marquardt in this weekend's UFC. And then we have Johnny Hendricks, the number one competitor, number one contender, you know, beating Carlos Condit and getting that shot at GSP. I mean, that's a pretty good year so far for the Dolce Diet and some of the biggest guys in the division, mind you. So why wouldn't you call me? I don't know. And that's all I have to say about that. That's you know, simple enough. Here, we're going to jump into some Q&As. This is going long. It's been a while. You got some Q&As, Brandy?
Let's
do it.
All right. We have Michael El Nino. Michael El Nino Mazzeppa. I butchered that.
Mazzeppa.
He says, congrats to your boy Hendricks. Just finished a month of the Dolce diet with exercise. I have lost a significant amount of fat around my waist, including my love handles, which I have had for life. I will update you at day 60 and 90 with pictures. I should have abs for the first time in my life. Thanks for everything, my friend. Stay Jersey strong.
Boom. Right on, brother. Nice work.
Nice. Let's see. We have a Man Beer Nat. He says,
Man Beer.
It's M-A-N-B-I-R. It's not like B-E-E-R. It's not like Man Beer.
I was a Man Beard.
No.
Probably because I was hanging out with Johnny.
I know.
Fear the Beard. He has shirts that say Fear the Beard, and it's an orange shirt, and the beard goes from the shoulders down around your stomach. They're really cool, actually.
That's great. I want to see one of those. Yeah. That's really cool. Okay, so Man Beer Nat says, how do you know when you're satisfied and when you are full after a meal?
That should be pretty easy for you. Just gauge it. If you feel full this meal, eat a little less next meal. And this is where the accountability comes in. I can't spoon feed you. I'm not going to be there to stand over your shoulder. But you know if you're fucking up, Man Beer. So don't fuck it up. Eat a little bit less. You know your portion size. Take less. Take less than you normally take and see how you feel. Give it about 10 minutes to truly start to move through your digestive system. If you're still hungry, then get another plate half the size of your first plate. Try that.
All right. We have Morgan Rigsby. She said, I wanted to thank you for a personal investment in the health of, for you taking a personal investment in the health of others. Last night after watching the fight, I immediately picked up your books. I finished reading one last night. My husband and I are starting the Dolce diet today. He's currently at the grocery store rounding up items for the week's menu, which had proven to be a daunting task compared to the normal garbage we consume. However, I am completely excited about this new lifestyle choice, and he's also looking forward to the honey glazed salmon, which is really good. Thank you for the inspiration, tools, and swift kick in the rear I needed to make this change. All the best, Morgan.
Morgan, absolutely. Thank you very much. And what I love about the Dolce diet is that families do it. Every day we see more and more families, more and more husband and wives, more and more photos of children loving and asking for more Dolce diet recipes. So I love it. And Morgan, thank you so much. Keep us posted. I want to hear about all your progress.
Danny McCumber says, hey, Mike, on the last podcast, you were talking about children and soda. I was wondering if you could give some healthy alternatives that kids would like. Thanks.
Hey, Danny. Yes. Well, the biggest priority is you don't expose them to it initially. Why don't you expose them to bleach? You're not going to expose them to that poison, right? Of course not. Why would you let them have soda? Oh, it's a birthday party. Let them be a kid. You're going to poison them? Let them smoke a cigarette then, too. Let them be a kid. Kids do that, right? Let them smoke weed. No, of course not. They're kids. You don't expose them to that stuff, right? So you got to make sure they're healthy initially. Now, moving forward, you take the soda out. It's not in the house. It's not allowed. It's not bad. And you let them know all the bad things about soda. So when they're out in the public and their friends are drinking, making fun of them, your kids know the truth. They're informed. They have facts. And you keep repetitively bringing that to your attention at home. And then when you and your wife look good, you got abs, you're healthy, you have all the time to play with your kids and be active and exercise, and their friends still talk shit, and the kids say, hey, how come they still say that? Well, you say, look at us and look at their parents. Right? Their parents who sit around and they eat KFC and they get pizzas every night for their kids. Look at their parents. I didn't see their dad at football practice today. He's not the coach of the team. He's not running around the kids. He's not taking everybody to the beach. He's not going to the theme park. He's not doing that stuff. He doesn't have that energy. He's sitting on the couch. He's watching, you know, Sunday football from his sofa, yelling at his wife to get him something. And his wife is in the kitchen making mac and cheese, you know, in her moo-moo, kind of dragging her ass across the kitchen. You know, that's how you do it. You set the example. Now, options, There's different teas. Herbal teas are great. You got to see, you know, caffeine or no caffeine. I'd say you want to tend less caffeine. So look at some of, you know, the berry teas, you know, like, which ones? Just look for something brewed. Green tea is always excellent. They make a decaf green tea. It's super high in antioxidants. Talk to the children's doctor, of course, if they have any issues, any allergies, any sensitivities. Teas are excellent. And put fresh fruits in teas. Put cucumbers, peeled cucumbers in teas. Put berries, raspberries. I mean, raspberries in purified water, cold water mixed up is delicious. I mean, looks great visually. And kids like things to be visual, and they like the taste, the sensation. They also like the texture, some of them. Some of them, you know, do or don't like certain kinds. But a little bit of chunky in there. Even some chia seeds. Make them eat their water. Make them a chia pudding. 2 tablespoons of chia seeds and 8 ounces of water. You let it stand for 20 minutes or so. You put some fresh berries on top. Sprinkle of cinnamon. Another high antioxidant nutrient. So hopefully those are good for you.
Andrew Hunt says, hey, Mike, wanted to know what you thought about seltzer water. My girlfriend loves it, and the can says the only ingredients are carbonated water and natural flavorings. Loving the podcast and love living lean.
Hey, Andrew. First, the carbonation, it disrupts your digestive system. So your body ceases to digest as efficiently as it had previous. Now you're looking at some sort of nutrient loss. That's one of the biggest reasons why I don't like it. Moving on, natural flavorings do not mean natural products. Natural flavors oftentimes mean chemically enhanced. So what is the natural flavor? If it was from a natural product, like you know, the sugar was from a date, let's say, if the essential fats were from coconut oil, it would say that. But because it says natural flavorings, it's garbage. So it's double garbage. You don't want it in your girlfriend's body.
Austin Kershaw says, I have a quick question for the group. I'm at the gym at 5 a.m. because that's the only time I can go. Is it better to eat before or after I exercise? I've been told both, so I would like to get some feedback from you.
Is it better to eat before or after? It is both. It depends. If I'm going to go on a steady state, you know, cardiovascular type of workout or training system, then sometimes I won't eat. Yeah, maybe first thing in the morning, I like a little bit of fat and sugar. It could be as simple as a handful of grapes, red grapes, and a tablespoon of almond butter. It could be a slice of Ezekiel toast with some honey or agave. Who knows? It could be half of an avocado and a whole peeled orange. That could be a great pre-workout for me. If I'm going to have a harder, more intense workout, then I'll have something like the breakfast bowl and I'll wait 2 hours for my workout. So I want a deeper source of energy, a deeper well to pull from. If I'm really going to be utilizing the glycogen, the sugar that's stored in my muscles, if I'm really going to be doing that, if I really want to have stable blood sugar, I'm going to try and get a little more fiber and fat into my stomach to slow the breakdown. That's what I'm going to do.
Camille Maris from Hazlitt, New Jersey.
Hey.
What's up? Says, Mr. Dolce, I have lost 18 pounds by counting calories. And after getting on board with the Dolce diet, I am now free of counting. God bless you, sir. I lost another 5 pounds in 2 weeks. I'm a full contact Kyokushin fighter and at a very comfortable weight for me of 195 pounds. He's 5'11 and 7.5% body fat.
You are my double.
I will be competing at a world tournament in London on April 7th, and that's why the low body fat. But I do have a lot of muscle I do not have a lot of muscle definition. I do work out 6 days a week with a couple of days of CrossFit in there, but no real weightlifting besides your recommended deadlifts and squats. Is muscle definition important as a fighter, and is it just a question of more weight training? Or with my amount of work, should I just let the Dolce diet take its course?
Yeah, just start living lean. Follow the process and your body will take care of itself. I'm like you in a lot of ways in that even at lower body fat percentages, I don't look as ripped as some guys with higher body fat percentages. It's just based upon my skin type and texture, and that's absolutely fine because I'm a fucking badass. You know what I mean? I feel like I could run through walls at this weight. I mean, just super healthy. Everything is, you know, just in proper order. And I'm not worried about that stuff. Now, I can certainly, you know, dry myself out, and that's where I can play with my electrolyte levels a little bit, my levels of hydration, and get really lean as I sometimes like to and want to. But really, I like to maintain a pretty good, stable lifestyle and body weight and don't get too concerned about it. And I talked about this previously, that, you know, cultural makeup, I think, has something to do with that. And it's not, you know, being, you know, racist or stereotypical at all, certainly. But it just – it's an observation that there are different ethnicities or cultural backgrounds that seem to have a different genetic, you know, visual capacity than other, you know, groups. Myself, I believe I fall into one of those groups. I'm Native American and I'm Italian, and I think, you know, those people tend to be a little less ripped, you know, in my estimation. Maybe I think we skew more towards the endomorphic side culturally, where other races skew a little more towards ectomorphic, and that's basically just a faster or a slower metabolism, where, you know, I think we do skew a little slower. We tend to store a little bit more body fat in some of the problem areas just a little bit easier. But we also have a tendency to put on strength and muscular size, functional size also. Now, a mesomorph is in the middle, and that's a Spartan. I mean, that's a guy that's, you know, unique and special. Where GSP, I would say, is a classic ecto-mesomorph, where Johnny Hendricks would be a classic meso-endomorph, where the first tendency, the predominant tendency is the first, and the, you know, next skew level would be the second. And I think that should make sense visually. Where Jake Ellenberger, I mean, he pretty much is a little close to a strict mesomorph. Jake, even in the offseason, doesn't tend to put on much body fat, so he doesn't have that endomorphic propensity. And he's a stocky, you know, thick-framed, you know, individual. So he doesn't go, you know, ectomorph, which tends to be a little lighter, longer framed.
Our next question is from Scott on our Facebook page. He says, I was always in great shape. I swam, surfed, hiked, went to the gym a few times a week, etc. I had a bad accident and wound up with 5 herniated discs at work. 6 years later, I've had 3 back surgeries, countless procedures, and have gained nearly 50 pounds because of pain, surgeries, and not being able to do what I did before. I feel disgusting and I'm fed up with being fat. I can't lift heavy weight anymore and I'm pretty much limited to walking, swimming, lift lightweights, and changing my diet. I've cut out adding all salt and sugar to foods. I don't drink soda or liquor. I eat a ton of chicken and broccoli, some rice and beans, drink my water, and have a few cups of coffee a day. I haven't lost 1 pound in nearly 3 weeks. What gives? I was hoping you could give some advice. I'm ready to order what I need to from your site, but obviously my condition is out of the norm. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Well, no fear there, because your condition is exactly the norm. Everybody out there is following a diet similar to yours, the bland, the boring, the bodybuilder diet. Now, whatever the name is, I mean, usually there's other fad names that get associated with it, but whatever the name is, that's what you're falling into. Your metabolism's not moving. You're nutrient deficient because you're only eating a specific type of food, so you become nutrient deficient in other areas. You're probably too focused on what they call, the bodybuilders call, the macronutrient level, your protein, carb, fat intake. And there's a percentage in those intakes that the bodybuilders focus on, and that's supposed to be the best thing ever, the holy grail. But ask any bodybuilder, it freaking sucks. They hate it. They can barely follow it for their competition, and as soon as they're done competing, they yo-yo off so far. Freaking hard. They put on 20 and 40 pounds of pure body fat. So you have a sluggish metabolism. It sounds, because you're trying to go a little bit too strict, too hard. You need to be living lean, man. You need to be following the lifestyle. Let your body dictate. Let your body find its true weight. Now, of course, I'm assuming you're under a doctor's care. All of this is under the assumption that you are under a doctor's care and your doctor is, you know, following you every step of the way and giving you advice and suggestions. But you should be living lean. You should be eating the high quality nutrients that are suggested in living lean. Look at the meal plans. Look at the recipes. Look at the training routines. You want to start adding mass, look at the power deadlift workout. Do the push-pull system. I mean, oh, you got a back issue. My apologies. So you got a back issue. We want to ease out of that. You should be working with that from your physical therapist. And let me know, have you been green lit from your physical therapist to start truly training again, resistance training? If not, you should definitely get that hammer. Rehab is everything. I would much rather you spend 2 additional weeks rehabbing than take a training session 2 hours too early. You're just setting yourself up for failure that way. So you got to set yourself up for success and just start living lean, man. Just, I mean, go to the Facebook page, go to my Twitter account, @TheDolceDiet, read the favorites. You want to get your freaking mind blown? We might have 5,000 favorites on there. We try and favorite, you know, a couple every day, and we just get bombarded every single day with thousands and thousands and thousands of just amazing testimonials of people all over the world, from elite athletes all the way down to people in Qatar, people that in Sri Lanka, people that, you know, are in places that some guys, some people, some of us might not even know exist, and all having very similar results, very similar progress. And it's all positive and it's awesome. So check that stuff out.
Our last question is from Rodney Randalls. He says, really love the podcast, guys. Super informative. My question is, do you know what stores are still carrying your books? I went to Barnes & Noble and they pulled all of your books off the shelves. They said, since you have new books coming out in the future, they do this to make people want it more? I am an amateur Muay Thai fighter and was really wanting to make your breakfast bowls and pit bull pancakes. As I said, I love the show. Look forward to the next one.
Hey, Rodney, how are you? Yeah, you know, we've had some troubles with Barnes & Noble, as has Tim Ferriss when he released his new book, The 4-Hour Chef. Tim Ferriss, I believe that was the first title ever published under Amazon's new publishing company. Well, the Dolce Diet, we actually own our own publishing company. We are self-published in that capacity that we own the company. So everything that comes out of us is ours, and we own it 100%. And that's against the industry. So that's actually caused us problems. We would be and should be, you know, on the New York Times bestseller list, but we are an independent publisher, and they find legal ways or, you know, written ways to keep us off those lists because, you know, it's a big boys club, and we're not in that club yet. We have resulted in going to Amazon and used Amazon very heavily to distribute the Dolce Diet series. We have the Dolce Diet Living Lean, the Dolce Diet Living Lean Cookbook, the Dolce Diet 3 Weeks to Shredded, and then we have two holiday books that we put out. We also use iTunes and Apple iBooks on Apple, but not nearly as exclusively as we work with Amazon. And we think that might be part of it. Unfortunately, so when Living Lean first came out in October of 2011?
2 years ago.
It came out 2 years ago. October 1st of 2011, we released Living Lean, and it was number one on the Barnes & Noble bestseller list by October 6th. I mean, it became number one immediately, and we were contacted directly from New York, from, you know, someone very high up in Barnes & Noble, and they said, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, that's what they said. It was shocking.
It was shocking. And I was like, wow, who are you? Like, what is going on with this book? We can't find anything about this publishing company that put it out. The publishing company is Conrad James Books. Why? Because that's the name of our dog.
That's right.
Conrad. Yeah, that's how we roll here up in the Dolce Diet House. Conrad James Books. And they're like, who the fuck are you guys? Like, you guys did this week, and we've never heard of you, and this, that. And I said, well, this is who I am, this is what we do, and why.
We were beating the Hunger Games.
Yeah, boom! How about that? What's up, Hunger Games?
That was crazy.
Crazy. So we came out that strong. So Barnes & Noble was super stoked to work with us, but we got weird reports that our books would be, like, on a shelf. They get, you know, whatever the minimum purchase was, and they'd be, boom, sold out immediately. And then they wouldn't re-up. And now I know Barnes & Noble has had problems because they're closing. And this is the problem. The brick-and-mortar bookstores are closing, and there's some sort of issue that goes on with their inventory. I don't know what's going on, but something with their business operations is not going so well, it seems. So why wouldn't the Dolce Diet title be sold in these stores? We don't know, and we haven't been able to tell people to go there anymore. In the beginning, we did. There was so much business that flooded through Barnes & Noble. I mean, we dominated their charts for a while, and then, poof, nothing, because they stopped carrying the books. Why is that an oversight, I would assume? I would assume that they want to make money because the Dolce Diet title still, I mean, the sales increase. They do very well because the word keeps spreading. The audience keeps growing. I mean, and it works. So people, you know, you tell your coworker about it. You tell your teammate, oh, my God, this works. I'm eating this and this and this. Yeah, I mean, the people have PTA meetings. There's groups now. Neighborhoods are getting together. Dolce Diet night, Friday night. Neighborhoods are getting together. You know, smokers are people, and they're taking turns making recipes. It's good stuff. It works. You feel good. It's inexpensive. Why wouldn't you do it? So what the issue with Barnes & Noble, I don't know. Unfortunately, I love going to Barnes & Noble. I used to love going to Barnes & Noble. I would love to walk into a bookstore and with my coffee, and I would just peruse. I'd spend hours there. Brandy, too. We love, I mean, when we go to New Orleans to find old bookstores. And we do.
We go through the bookstores, dusty shelves, and oh, it's so incredible. But yeah, Barnes & Noble is having its issues. The Dolce Diet, Living Lean, and the cookbook, I mean, they're still bestsellers. So I think just Barnes & Noble, I mean, I don't know, I'm no expert, but I just think Barnes & Noble is keeping their stock low of like just bare essential books because all of their stores are closing.
And it sucks. I mean, there was one right here in Vegas in Town Square.
Yeah.
That when we first moved here, it was there. And then we just went one day. It was gone. It was like the box store. Boxes.
Oh, the container store.
The container store. The box store.
Whatever.
So the container store is now taking the place of bookstores. I mean, really, what has society come to? And that's different. But, you know, as a publishing company, we saw the trends. We were ahead of the ebook trend. We were ahead of the ebook trend. Now, a lot more book titles are transferring over to ebooks. But we kind of dominate that market in a large way because we embraced it. We contacted Amazon immediately. We contacted Apple immediately. Say, hey, this is what we want to do. We want to get our content out to as many people as we can, as inexpensively as possible. What can you do? How can we work together? How efficient can we make this? And they were really easy to work with. It's really easy for us to work with them as an author. So as a publishing company, that's why. And Barnes & Noble, God, I wish I could tell people, go to Barnes & Noble, buy the freaking book. I mean, they're bestsellers. Why wouldn't you want to sell it? So weird thing. But I do have we're working on a big distribution deal right now. We're partnering with an exclusive distributor, and we're going to make it really easy, we think, for you guys to get a lot more Dolce Diet books, but also Dolce Diet products that we're going to be sharing for you. And it's only top-notch stuff, guys. Things that you like, hopefully you want, that certainly fit the Dolce Diet lifestyle, and it'll never, ever, ever, ever be anything that I don't use in my own life with my own family. That's always the rule. So that stuff is exciting. And guys, here we go. We're almost at an hour and a half. Great podcast. I'm so happy to be back here in Vegas, and I got something. Guess what I'm doing today? I got a meeting today. I got something big coming out. You want to talk about video games? Well, we'll talk about that big title thing. And what could this process be? Like I said, we're bringing content to you guys nonstop, dropping bombs on your moms. Whoa. All right, guys. All good stuff here at UFC Fit. Check out UFCFit.com. Get your name on the newsletter. Do you want to be in on the first wave of UFC Fit? Do you want to know before anybody else knows? Go to UFCFit.com. I'm freaking excited. It's about to launch. April's going to get big. We're at the end of March. April's a big month for me. I got Chael Sonnen fighting John Jones for the UFC 205-pound world title. Team Sonnen, the dark side. Coach Clayton hires Jamie Huey. We're going to get Jamie on here real soon. Scott McQuarrie. Luke Big Slow Barnett. I know he's up in there. Jimmy Crash. What's Jimmy's last name?
You never know.
I never, because it's Crash, Jimmy Crash. Super cool kid from Boston. Like him. And who else? A couple of the other tough guys are floating through the gym. That's it, guys. I always hate saying bye. I always hate saying bye. I hate jumping off the podcast. I feel like we're locked in. We're talking to each other. I want to keep on going. Too bad we can't do two-way, multi-way podcasts. All you thousands and thousands of people, if we could all talk at the same time. One universal mind locked in, like the Borg, right, from Star Trek. The Borg.
Say goodbye, Mike.
Goodbye, Mike. All right, guys. Don't count calories. Make calories count. Boom!
Cause you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. Cause you can't, you won't, and you don't stop.